We are so excited to announce that we have opened the doors to our private membership community, the Symposium. Inside the Symposium, you have access to all of our free and paid content, daily prompts to pull to, live monthly workshops, reading room Zooms, and monthly virtual meetups. We also host monthly challenges and have a lively and engaged community, as well as tarot spread and resource libraries. The Symposium is an incredible community of like-minded folks who value the intersection of tarot, mental health, self-reflection, and personal growth. We're really excited to meet you all inside the Symposium. So head over to thetarotdiagnosis.com and click Join the Symposium today to become a part of our community.
You're listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. We're your hosts. I'm Luna.
And I'm Shannon. We're both clinical psychotherapists who trained together at Johns Hopkins.
Now we are both in private practice in Tampa, Florida, and in Baltimore, Maryland.
We also both happen to have a love for tarot.
Each episode, we work to demystify the tarot and explore its connections to mental and emotional health.
While this podcast may feel therapeutic, it is not meant to take the place of psychotherapy.
Join us while we pull cards to better understand ourselves and those around us.
Hey, Luna.
Hey, Shannon.
So today's episode is probably going to be pretty meaty. It's one that I think all of us have experienced, if not once, multiple times. We're going to be talking about relationship ruptures or relationship fractures. So a really heavy topic, but you know, one that's worth exploring. And I feel like we should probably just preface by saying, you know, throughout this episode, as we're talking about relationship fractures, we're not talking about abuse or intimate partner violence. And if you or someone you know is in danger, your job is to try and seek safety. So this episode is solely about looking at fractures through the lens of an emotional connection between people that has weakened, or when one or both partners feel unfulfilled or unseen, or something that comes up a lot in my practice is feeling unappreciated. Mm. And this isn't always just between romantic partners. This happens in platonic relationships, friendships with coworkers, neighbors, family members, anyone that you have some sort of connection with. You can experience a fracture or a rupture in the relationship, and we get to dive in and explore what to do with that.
Yeah. I mean, I like this topic because specifically also because of like what you said at the end there, because I feel like it's so quick when you sort of hear the word relationship to think that we're talking about romantic relationships. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, I really think that this is a topic about what do we do when there's a relationship with somebody and it's a relationship that is important for whatever reason. And there's been a fracture or a rupture, or there's been a disruption. And there's upset and pain. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like your world gets turned upside down when this happens. I mean, it can gnaw at you, you know? An upsetting conversation with a coworker can sit with you for, you know, the entire weekend, just stewing on it over and over and over again. Or, you know, like having an argument with your best friend can just be devastating.
Right.
And I think everybody can sort of understand the upset that comes with there. Something's not right now in something that was right before. And I don't know what to do with it. And so I think it's just everybody's had this experience and it's important to talk about how to handle it.
Yeah, that was really beautifully said. I feel like maybe we should just go ahead and pull a card now.
Sure. Yeah. Let's just go for it and see what direction, because there's a million ways it could go.
Right. And I feel like too, so maybe as we're pulling a card, we can talk about the four stages of relationships too, just to kind of highlight the stage that we're going to be talking about. So there's an organization, I think they're out of California. I just keep their PDF on hand because I like how they describe long-term relationships. It's called the Relationship Institute. I haven't really done any research into them other than like that they have this document that I really like. But they highlight the four stages of long-term relationships. But the stages seem so fitting to any relationship, you know, platonic, romantic, familial. So the first stage is the honeymoon stage, or what they call symbiotic stage or symbiosis. So this is when, you know, everything's kind of fine and dandy and you're just like excited to be around that person and love is blind type of deal. The second stage is really what we're going to be talking about, and that's what they consider soured symbiosis. So this is when I love like they use the word disruption. So when a disruption has happened or a disappointment comes up. And then the third stage is differentiation, which is when you essentially start to accept that you are two different people and figuring out how to build mutual respect for each other now having discovered these differences. And then the fourth stage is the synergy stage. And that's when you get to this point in your relationship where each of you recognize and acknowledge that you are better because of the relationship and have a deep mutual respect for each other and like what you're building individually and together. So I think even though we're going to be focused on that soured symbiotic stage, we're also probably going to be exploring how to move into differentiation and synergy.
That's so interesting. Like, I don't know, cool document, right?
Right.
Like, yeah. I love the way that, that it just kind of breaks it down. And I think it's really interesting because actually, if I were doing work with a client around this, I would sort of start with stage three and four.
Yeah.
And sort of start digging in with like, well, is this a relationship which is worthwhile? I'm a real jerk as a therapist sometimes because I'm like, well, why don't you just break up? Or like, mm-hmm. maybe you could just quit your job. Like I do kind of offer those challenge questions really to see how much pushback I get, because more often than not, what the person will say is, you know, the thing is that like there is really a value here and I'm upset yeah. because I don't have access to the value.
Right. That kind of like reverse engineering. It can be really yeah. important because it's like, well, hold on, there actually is something here worth fighting for.
Right. Exactly. And so then that's when the real work begins, when you start yes. peeling away backwards like that. What did you pull?
I pulled three of wands. What'd you pull?
Oh, that's nice. Knight of Pentacles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Knight of Pentacles, three of wands. So, I feel like I only view Three of Wands now through the lens of that book that I picked up. I talked about this on one of the recent episodes for that book from the 70s that I picked up where the author describes this card as establishing unity between divergent thought systems. So it kind of like works well with the episode, but it does kind of seem like Three of Wands represents that differentiation stage where kind of we want to be when we, you know, because the soured symbiosis stage is you realize that there are divergent thought systems and there has been this, you know, rupture. So Three of Wands makes sense here. What are you thinking about Knight of Pentacles?
I want to talk about both. I agree with you on Three of Wands. I think that that's exactly right. I've been thinking about the card recently, just as I've been pulling it a bunch. And it does sort of feel like, I don't know, I feel like really embodied in this place of like, you've walked on this path and you've gotten this far. And now we have to kind of take a lay of the landscape and take a pause and stand here for a second and look out, recognizing I've come this far. What direction do I go now? That feels very true in relationships when there's been a rupture of, okay, let's not, number one advice, let's not necessarily get into an argument about it and let's not act in a impulsive way. Three of Wands is that great reminder to pause. Just hang on for a second and let's just get a lay of the landscape. And that feels like very wise of just hold on.
That actually reminds me of a quote. I'm glad that you, because I was kind of like three months. What am I going to do with this? I was like, I want to say what I'm going to say. Thanks for kind of taking that for me. But everything you just said reminded me of a quote from Esther Perel, and she says, "Love is a verb, not a permanent state of enthusiasm."
Oh yes.
And I feel like that fits so nicely with, you know, how you just depicted Three of Wands for us, and then again that kind of unity of divergent thought systems, because the truth is like we do experience, you had mentioned this a moment ago, the most pain most often from the people who we love and really care about. And, you know, it could be so easy for us to be reactive and then throw it all away. And Three of Wands really encourages us to stay and, you know, look out and remember that, okay, I'm not in a permanent state of enthusiasm anymore. Love is a verb. This is going to require some work. And the Three of Wands is saying, okay, now I have to figure out what that looks like. It's interesting thinking about this because when we experience some sort of irritation or disappointment with a stranger, like think about when you're online and someone leaves, I don't know, an irritating or insensitive comment on something, and you might get angry and defensive and, you know, worked up, but if someone that you have developed an emotional attachment with does something like that, we feel a deep sense of betrayal. And that betrayal is way more intense because we have built that connection with someone who we thought was safe or someone we view as safe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we don't experience that with a stranger because there's no safety connection with them. So now you do have to kind of stand there in between, you know, these three wands and this huge landscape of possibility and figure out, well, what's next?
I feel like it's about to get really interesting. At least I hope so. You're talking about when there is an emotional connection with somebody. And I think that that's a yes and, because I think that this Knight of Pentacles also sort of talks about the importance of building a structure in your life that includes the need for other people. Because as we've said so many times in so many episodes, we're tribal people. We are designed to live in a society. We're designed to be reliant on others and have others reliant on us. That's just the way humans are meant to work. And we do get upset and defensive when there's a disruption in the system. And part of that is an emotional response. Like, I felt emotionally safe with you. But there is also just a basic practicality to it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really interesting if you've ever had the experience of having a really great working relationship with somebody, but not having a good sort of talking relationship or emotional relationship mm-hmm. with them. And that is just like one of the coolest things to be able to do of like, wow, we work great together. Mm-hmm. And over time, an emotional relationship can build. But there's a value to having that strong working, you know, co-creating symbiotic relationship that comes from just like having a similar work style. And I think that that's why Knight of Pentacles is interesting. It's incredibly practical, right? It's this moment of, uh-oh, there is a problem. And let me just take stock of where I fit into this situation, where the other person fits into the situation, what I think of the situation in mm-hmm. general, and what do I want to do with it? I mean, it's really logical. It's willing to take a risk, but also just a place of let me be almost practical in terms of the need to save this relationship, which doesn't sound like sexy or beautiful at all, but is truth.
Yeah. Okay. So this is interesting. The way you're talking about Knight of Pentacles really reminds me of one of the cards I pulled for the episode, the very first card when I was laying out cards was Judgment. Oh. And I was like, ooh, ugh. But then I started viewing Judgment through the lens that you're viewing Knight of Pentacles. And it is this more practical approach that can be difficult regardless of if there is an emotional connection with somebody, because you have emotions about the situation. So even if if this is a coworker, for example, and you're not, you know, emotionally bonded like you would be with your friend or your partner or family member, you're still going to have an emotional reaction to the rupture that occurred. But Judgment and Knight of Pentacles are kind of like nudging you to say, okay, let's just acknowledge, you know, what your truth is. Let's make some assessments. Let's take some responsibility and give and create space for the other person to do the same. So it's interesting because I think when you're navigating a relationship rupture, the word judgment or even the judgment card can feel kind of negative. And I think in this case, it's just neutral. It's not even positive. It's neither positive nor negative. It just is. And I think it also encourages us to refrain from asking kind of why questions, like why is this happening to me? Or, you know, why is this happening to us? And instead go to that Knight of Pentacles energy and ask, well, what led to this? What was going well? When did we take a detour? What obstacles occurred that maybe we didn't acknowledge? And what's happening when we're functioning best? I think the emotion part comes in when we don't allow ourselves to exist in that Judgment and Knight of Pentacles area, because going back to our defensiveness episode, we just so desperately want to be heard.
so many interesting things right now. Yeah, because I think that the thing that we just unpacked is the idea of the value of the relationship. And then secondarily, maybe, or maybe at the same time, or maybe first, maybe it depends, is the idea of my feelings about the situation.
Yeah.
And I think that there is very much like a two of pentacles. This is starting to feel very pentacle-y to me. Mm-hmm. This two of pentacles of being able to say, on the one hand, I'm fired up. Like on the one hand, I am having big feels right now. And when I have big feels, my big feels seem to be the absolute truth. So that's kind of one, being able to say my big feels might not be the absolute truth. And I have to balance it with the idea that there's a practicality that I need to take care of. And I think that this is actually, I mean, you talking about the internet earlier feels correct. I think that this is a problem that lots of people have talked about. Culturally, we've moved farther and farther away from a sense of community. And so many of us are seeking community in new and different ways. But the problem with you put a community together, inevitably, there are going to start to be ruptures.
Yeah.
And that is something that I feel like is not well practiced. Mm-mm. Like now it's like really kind of turned into a culture of do your work, sit at home and do, you know, like go to class over Zoom or, you know, be a remote worker and have limited interactions so that when there is a rupture, I think we're just not really practiced on how do I deal with it.
I think that is so right, because really, you're really highlighting how we live in our own little boxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it reminds me of something that, you know, I often share, and it's this idea that we are kind of programmed or, you know, exist in this space of listening to respond instead of listening to truly understand, you know, and when we exist in that space, we can't really experience empathy and we can't make progress in relationships and we can't emotionally connect in a healthy way, either with ourselves or the other person. And, you know, I think the reason we listen to respond instead of understand is because we do feel this, often this urge to protect ourselves. And that urge to protect ourselves isn't often rooted in the actual need to protect ourselves. But we get so worked up, usually because of past experiences, you know, and our brain is like, oh, wait, this reminds us of something that happened to us, you know, back when I was 10, or, you know, a couple of years ago when I was in this other relationship, when maybe we weren't truly heard or seen or understood. And so then we feel like we do have to fight really hard to get our voice heard. And in doing so, we neglect accepting and acknowledging that other people also deserve to have their voice heard, which stops us from being able to essentially authentically and vulnerably connect with the people that we really do want to vulnerably connect with. You know, that's why we seek out community in the first place, is to connect. And it takes a lot of willingness and a lot of discomfort to be able to say, I have to stop listening to respond and really sit here to listen to understand this person, because then I'm also modeling that it's safe for them to listen to understand me and not just listen to respond as well.
And I mean, I feel like it's getting uncomfortable, you know, like this is great, like such good theory, but like in reality, like this
is fucking hard.
It's really hard. It's like really, really hard.
Yes.
Because I think we at this point have to acknowledge the risk. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that the reason why you're fired up is because you've been wounded in this situation. Now, good question. Is that wound an action? Like, did that person actually do something to you? Maybe, maybe not, or maybe only a little bit, or maybe it's a misunderstanding, or are you misunderstanding? And the thing is that like we have to create this space for it's possible that I'm not a misunderstanding. It's possible that this person is really a dangerous person.
Right.
And it's so, so hard to sit in this space of I'm completely fired up. My feelings are huge. I'm getting like red sirens like blaring in my ear, and I'm supposed to listen to understand. It's incredibly difficult to do. And I think that this is where I cut the deck and I pulled Star card becomes really important. We want to get to a place of star card, whether that is a star card of, okay, I understand how I was overreacting and I understand how this situation kind of played out, or a star card of, okay, I understand that this relationship is not as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. But when you're in that moment of a rupture, you're in the tower. You don't know where you're going. And so this sort of, how do we learn to navigate between the tower into the star card moment is messy and terrifying.
Yeah. Everything you're saying is so important. And I think that I almost feel like we go back to judgment then and say, well, hold on. This is where the assessment takes place. Am I truly in danger right now? Is this person's intention truly to hurt me? You know, what is really happening here? And sometimes we can't figure that out on our own.
Yeah.
And that's when, you know, friends or therapists, you know, or some sort of mentor, someone else in your life where you do have to seek out, you know, guidance from other people to say, hey, you know me really well. This is what I'm experiencing right now. Mm-hmm. Is my reaction proportionate to, you know, the situation? Or, you know, is there something here I'm not seeing? Is there something that, you know, this has triggered within me that I need to address? And giving yourself kind of the grace and the compassion to explore that and be able to identify that, yes, I am uncomfortable right now. I am hurting. Like this created a really uncomfortable place for me. And if the other person that is part of this process isn't also willing to identify that you're uncomfortable, mm-hmm. then that question of, am I truly in danger right now? Then maybe you are. Because if someone isn't willing to sit with you and say, okay, yes, I can see how you're uncomfortable, or I can see how this got out of hand, if they can't do that, then you're not going to be able to repair the relationship. You have to have two people who are willing to sit down and say, this sucks. This hurts. Now what?
It is really interesting because figuring that difference out can be really, really challenging.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go back to that judgment card because I'm going to read it a little bit differently. Like, to me, as you know, like, judgment card is really about being your best self, like entering into the space of entering your calling or sort of who you're best possible self is. And so one of the things that you can do in this moment of I'm fired up and I think I'm being attacked is to take a deep breath and say, mm-hmm. okay, I don't like how the other person is behaving. I am highly distrustful of this other person right now. Mm-hmm. But what my job is to show up as my best possible self. Now it's funny because it feels really, really risky, but actually, it's like the strongest, most bravest thing you can do. Because if you end up getting hurt again, you get to walk away. You might lose something, mm-hmm. but you walk away with a clear conscience. You know, like, right. You walk away with just like, I know I did my very best. And that, like, there's no price tag on that versus the I'm really ashamed of how I behaved there. I mm-hmm. let my anger get away with me. I let my upset get away. And I'm still questioning whether I made mistakes. I mean, like, how many times, I'm sure you've seen it, like, have clients who sort of like ruminate over things that happened mm-hmm. 20 years ago. And they're still like, I'm not sure if I made the right call there. A really good way to avoid that in life is by trying to show up as your best self. This brings me to Gottman. So, mm-hmm. right, like the Four Horsemen, like the Gottman Institute. The Gottman is a couple, I believe, who are therapists who specialize in relationships, specifically in couples. They're very well known. And they have this really clever concept of the Four Horsemen of the apocalypse of a relationship. And they predict when a relationship is going to end as if you're seeing the Four Horsemen. They are criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. Mm-hmm. So if I'm working with a person, I'll start asking about those things. I'll start asking, like, is this what's in your heart? Are you holding contempt in your heart? Versus, are you able to express some place of appreciation? And, you know, people, including myself, you know, like, we all can understand this. It's so easy to slip into a place of contempt. And when we've gotten mm-hmm. there, it's really hard to say, you know what, but I appreciate this person for these other reasons. It feels like you're about to go underwater and you're going to drown, but that's not what drowning is.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because we were like, are we going to talk about attachment theory today? And I was kind of like, man, I don't know. It's got its flaws. But, you know, I feel like that kind of naturally segues nicely with the Gottman theory, because the way that we attach in relationships, you know, is often learned and instilled in us, you know, in childhood, which then often affects how we handle conflict, which is what the Gottmans are talking about. And if we don't do the self-reflective work to figure out how we are attaching or what's led to our different attachment styles, whether it's avoidant, anxious, disorganized, or secure, and then figuring out why, you know, why am I reacting this way in conflict? You know, we can't truly grow. And another important thing to remember is, you know, behavior is learned. So how we behave during conflict is probably how we were taught to behave growing up. And if you, you know, if you grew up in a home where, you know, if there was, you know, something that upset someone and then there was a huge blow up, yelling, screaming match and things were being thrown, you learned that getting really hot and angry and yelling showed that you cared about something. And so you are now taking that into your relationships when really it's an unhealthy way to manage conflict. Likewise, if your family didn't address conflict at all and avoided it, but you could feel the tension, you were then taught that it was not safe to talk about things, or you shouldn't talk about things because maybe if you did, something bad would happen. So it's worth looking at how do I handle when there's a relationship rupture? What is, you know, what's my go-to response and where did I learn that and how is it helping me and how is it hurting me?
I think that's right. And that's work that we can do that we don't necessarily need to have a rupture. That's like good work to do before or in between ruptures, so that when it inevitably happens, you can pause and kind of question yourself there of like, oh, am I doing that thing? I might be doing that thing.
You know, it reminds me, you can do this work with tarot because, you know, I very much identify with Queen of Swords. Like, she's my archetype, but like very much in both like light and shadow versions. And, you know, I've really started to, you know, accept that about myself and how, you know, when you're dealing with conflict and relationship ruptures, as long as it's safe, you almost have to like reprogram your brain to surrender. And I hate that word because I have been taught that you don't surrender. And, you know, it's funny. I always joke that therapists are the biggest hypocrites because, you know, we will say like, this is what you're supposed to do, but then like, it's really difficult for us to do it. And surrendering is one of those things because, you know, with the Queen of Swords archetype, like I feel like I have to be on guard and ready to protect myself all the time because I have been hurt so often by the people who were supposed to love and protect me, that now in my adult relationships, platonic or romantic or whatever, I have to work really hard to allow myself to relax into a connection and not be hypervigilant and not search for red flags or behaviors that might indicate that something's going wrong or someone's trying to hurt me. And I laugh at that because I know that the people that I choose to surround myself with, I know rationally that they would never try to harm me because I've done so much work to set boundaries and to keep people in my life who wouldn't intentionally hurt me. But it's still an ongoing process for me. And it is difficult because the shadow of the Queen of Swords does often pop up and I can be too cold and almost too like harsh in my directness. And I have to allow myself to soften and surrender sometimes. And it's not easy.
So beautiful, everything you just shared. So like vulnerable and kind of you to like say all of that. And I think points us in such a true direction of, and I think you're right, like tarot does help with sort of getting to know our inner selves before doing, I mean, you can do them simultaneously, obviously, but it is really helpful to understand oneself before we start being able to really engage well in relationships. At the same time, I think sometimes relationships are our best teachers. So it's kind of yes and.
Right.
Right. But understanding that, yeah, this is a response that I have, and I've had it multiple times. The other part of that, I think, which is where it gets confusing, is in being able to recognize what kind of a relationship do I continue to attract?
Yes.
Because if we are used to, you know, an explosive relationship, if we're used to an avoidant relationship, am I just repeating a pattern because the other person is repeating the exact same pattern with me?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this me getting fired up?
You just like opened a door.
Yeah.
Because, oh my gosh, how many times have, you know, we both probably had this conversation in our practice where people will say, just this type of person is attracted to me. And these are the relationships that I get in. And you have to tread carefully at first because, you know, you don't want to be accusatory, but it's like, okay, well, what is your role in this though? Mm-hmm. And your role is that you often learn that the relationships that, you know, if going back to the example of, you know, how you learn to handle conflict in your relationship, if people were throwing things in explosive and then like being unsafe, but then, you know, embracing afterwards, you learned that that pattern was true love. And so go towards what you're familiar with. You know, if someone's, you know, having this big display of anger and intensity, you go back to childhood and think, oh, this person truly loves me because they're fighting in this moment. So you have to really sit down and say, well, hold on. Like, this is how I learned to love, but is this a healthy version of loving? Is this safe for me?
Right. You know, I mean, and I think it goes, it's like so broad reaching. It's not even, it doesn't even have to be that intense. It can also just be like, how am I used to people talking to me? I mean, mm-hmm. I remember once in grad school, a visiting professor kind of lost her shit at me.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, it was. And afterwards, like we had a break and a whole bunch of people came up to me afterwards and they were like, oh my God, are you okay? And it was funny because I didn't notice. Because it was familiar. I was used to kind of, you know, I grew up in a home where like I sort of caught a lot of shit. Mm-hmm. And so I just was like, yeah, that was a little over the top. Like it didn't even occur. So I think that being aware of how much shit do you put up with or how many blind spots do you have around other people's negative behaviors? And then the flip of it is also true. It's not just like looking at everybody and being like, this person's messed up, but learning how to just love and embrace the ways other people are showing up well. Because I think that we often then sort of develop this sort of red flag of, I see this, this is the red flag, this is a red flag. And we're missing the part of, well, maybe that person was silent because that person is just a little bit more introverted. Or that person has, oh my gosh, I actually have a really fun dynamic in my practice right now. I'm working with a good handful of people who are either a therapist in a relationship or they're in a relationship with a therapist.
Yeah. That's so, always fun.
Like so fun. So fun. Because there is sort of like a little game we can play around sorting and categorizing. And it's a little bit more work to be able to say some people just need some more processing speed. And you get a therapist in an argument with somebody, you know, often the therapist has an upper hand and that needs to be acknowledged.
Right. Oh, I love that you said that. The therapist has the upper hand and that needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah, because we're fast. We're quicker at it.
Right. And we are well versed in
And picking it apart.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny because I experience that in a lot of my own relationships and it can be difficult too, because it's not only that you have the upper hand, but often the people around you expect you to have the upper hand.
Also true.
Because, and it's
true.
It's like, fuck, can you just let me like lose my shit for a minute? Like, do I have to play therapist all the time?
Oh, I get it the other way. I get it. The like, don't play therapist at me. And I'm like, this is how I talk.
Right.
I can't help it. Like, that's just how I talk.
Well, right. And it's more, that's how I am too. But deep down, I'm like, I want to be able to not be the therapist for once, please. But everything that you're saying reminds me of, so I pulled two queens. So I pulled the Queen of Swords and the Queen of Cups. And I'm like, okay, it's really cool. I pulled them simultaneously back to back. And they're actually both looking at each other. Like when you set them side by side, Queen of Swords is looking at Queen of Cups. And it's fascinating because I feel like this Queen of Cups is kind of this compassion, understanding that she's done a lot of work to gain control and understanding over her emotional landscape. Mm. And that there's this true balance that exists between the world she lives in and the world she creates in her mind, shown by both the solid ground and the water. And there's something interesting. So in my own kind of personal healing journey, I've been dabbling in watercolors again. So I'm painting like some of the cards that I pull and honing in on all these little details. And the Queen of Cups, I never paid attention to this before because I don't know, my brain just automatically focuses on other things. But she's got these three little cherubs that are carved into her throne. And I immediately go to like, okay, those are different versions of our inner child. Mm. And this queen is so proud of them that she's got them carved on her throne, almost as this like reminder to say, look how far I've come, but I'm, you know, still honoring their existence and how they might influence me in the way I show up in relationships. But because she's the Queen of Cups, I feel like she's also saying it's also a nod to the people I encounter and their inner children and how they show up for them in their life and the relationships that we build. And I think that that's a true sign of growth, is being able to say, here I am having my experience, but I'm also willing to pause, maybe going back to that Three of Wands from the beginning and say, but I also fully understand that you are bringing all of your own experiences into this moment as well. And we both have to be patient with each other while we sift through all of this shit.
That was so good. I don't know what to say.
I don't ever really pull Queen of Cups, but I don't know. She definitely had a lot to say today.
Yeah, that was amazing. Like, it really was good. I'm really enjoying the conversation we're having. I feel like it's really interesting and lively and has some good information. But there's like absolutely an elephant in the room. And I cut the deck a while ago and I got Nine of Swords and I just kind of put it to the side. I was like, no, thank you. I don't want to deal with that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I feel like it is only reasonable to acknowledge that the reason why we decided to do this specific episode is because we had a rupture a couple days ago. And boy, it sucked pretty hard. Yeah. And, you know, two therapists having a rupture is really interesting because we both have the upper really hand, is. Right? But we also both were messy. And I mean, maybe that's the part that I'm going to honor, is just like that I'm still messy. I feel like we did a really amazing job of getting, of processing it and mm-hmm. getting back on track. And we've had a couple of good conversations since then. And I feel like we are back on track, which feels great. And I think also we need to honor the fact that the reason why we were able to do that is because we both have individually done a lot of this work independently. Yeah. We both have gotten to a place in our lives where we're very careful about who we select. And so mm-hmm. if I have a rupture with somebody in my life, you, my partner, like somebody who's in the inner circle, I know that that's gotta be at least half me. Mm. And I'm sure you feel the same way, like of this, totally. Like, yeah, like if you're in the inner circle, like I've already made that choice and I trust that choice. That took me a long time to get to there. But I think I just need to acknowledge that we said we might talk about this, but I'm still Nine of Swords about it. Like, I'm still a little anxious. I'm still a little like, I don't know, like scared bunny. And I think that we can say that that's part of the healing of a rupture is recognizing that it takes a while to come back fully.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because, like, you know, when we were like, what are we going to talk about? And, you know, I was like, oh, we could talk about relationships on the heels of our own thing. And then you were like, we could talk about relationships. I'm like, okay, like, we're both on the same page. Maybe we do it. And we're both like, you know, if it comes up, it comes up. But I think just saying, you know, because people who follow us and are in the community, and it's funny because we hadn't even had our big discussion to explore the rupture until like right after we did our very first like book club. And it's like no one in the community knew that like there was a lot of tension with us before that. So it's so funny, you know, kind of navigating all of this and having kind of this public element to it, because, you know, if you were having a rupture with your best friend, you know, you just have a rupture with your best friend, whatever, or your partner, and that's something you deal with. But, you know, there's a layer that you and I didn't even really talk about that of how like, well, there's all these kind of other people involved,
yeah.
but like not involved, but like kind of.
Yeah.
So it's a little odd, but I think it's important to say that, yeah, it happens even to people like therapists who are well-versed in, you know, navigating difficult situations. And I think it just goes to show that, you know, no matter what, we're all human and we all have our baggage. And no matter how much work you do, stuff is still going to come up. I mean, that's just part of being human. And, you know, being able to say, okay, yeah, this came up for me and this sucks. And I mean, I said earlier, I'm very Queen of Swords, even the shadow side. And that's something I'm constantly working on. And, you know, just knowing that you don't have to be perfect all the time is comforting, but also knowing that even though I'm not perfect all the time, I still have the responsibility to work on my shit.
Mm. I mean, there's just so much right there. Before the episode, the card I pulled was Three of Pentacles.
Oh, lots of pentacles.
Yeah, right. And I think what you said about the idea of like the relationship that I am in, like ours is really like, very defined example, but like mm-hmm. it's true with all sorts of examples. The relationship I am in has an impact on others. And I do need to be aware of, you know, like all sorts of things. Like if you have a fight with a coworker, it affects the office environment. A fight with the spouse affects the household. There's almost always other people involved, or at least there probably should be. And realizing that there is this commitment to our larger community, it goes back to the thing I was saying at the beginning of we are designed to sort of be responsible for one another and to one another. And that, boy, it's actually a really heavy load, but it also is a light load when you realize like, look, I've got to show up for other people. It kind of forces you to be a grown up and say like, well, I got to do what I have to do.
Yeah. And, you know, something that just came up for me hearing you talk about that made me realize there's a component of being a therapist and there's a component of when you've done all this work that you kind of know what questions you should be asking in order to repair the rupture and work on yourself and the relationship that someone who maybe hasn't had the privilege to do all the work or, you know, isn't quite sure where to start or hasn't maybe had a lot of good role models in their life of how to ask appropriate questions in order to repair, because it goes back to our episode on defensiveness. We're kind of naturally programmed to want to point fingers and protect ourselves. But I feel like we should offer the listeners like some examples of ways that you can be maybe embrace some page energy and be curious about yourself and your relationship and asking more maybe open-ended strength-based questions, because a lot of times when there's been a rupture or betrayal in a relationship, we want to say, why did you do this to me? Or why are you behaving this way? And sometimes the person doesn't truly know. And that can actually cause more issues because you're desperate to find an answer when there might not be one. So asking questions like, well, when do you trust me? Or what do I do that leads you to feeling safe with me? Or, you know, what's something about you that you wish I truly understood? You know, and then having that person ask those same questions back to you, those are questions that are automatically going back to my word surrender, allow you to kind of soften and surrender into the relationship instead of holding those swords and wanting to be so defensive. Because if you truly value each other and value what the relationship has to offer, these are the questions, types of questions you should be asking each other in the middle of all this anyway. And, you know, you and I actually experienced this. Some of the questions mm-hmm. we were asking each other mm-hmm. were like, you know, what was it like when things were going really well? Yeah. And then right. we were like, oh, we were doing X, Y, and Z. And then we were like, okay, you know, we realized, you know, how we got off course a little bit. And we're like, okay, we need to start doing X, Y, Z again. You know, so yeah.
I feel like it might even be helpful just to say what XYZ is, because I think it's just so universal. What we discovered is that we had become such a tightly run ship that we started kind of automating things and started talking in shorthand and started communicating over text like an awful lot.
Right.
And which was fine for a while and necessary at points just because like, you know, like lives are busy. Yeah. Right. But really, like, the heart of it is, it's so cliche, but it's so true, is our real communication had broken down.
Yeah.
And now I'll take that a step further and say, you know, if you're doing couples work as a therapist, like what people say, right? Like, what do they say? That you get the email, I'm looking for a couples therapist because we're having a problem with communication. Right. And 9 times out of 10, I'm like, let's not start with that. Because you're mm-hmm. actually having a problem with defensiveness. You're actually right. having a problem with stonewalling. You're having a problem right. with contempt. That's where your actual problem is. But right. the truth of it is that when we're communicating and asking the questions that you're talking about, and when we're actually having verbal communications and sort of asking clarifying questions, that's where ruptures lessen and are healed.
Mm-hmm. It's so important to say that and to really hear, you know, what you're describing, because, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, it's so easy for someone to say in a situation like with us, for example, like we felt really disconnected from each other. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was because, yeah, we kind of just like were on autopilot. And for us, it works so much better when we're having those kind of epic 2-hour phone conversations
yeah.
that, you know, we had gotten away from. But most people would come in and say, well, you don't talk to me, or you're not speaking, you know, you're ignoring me. And when you say something like that, it's going to immediately cause the other person to say, well, now you're not safe. But instead, if you say, wait, I feel disconnected from you, you're mm-hmm. acknowledging that the relationship and the connection that you have with each other is really important and you want it back. And that's where, you know, your own language and the way you're communicating is in these moments is so important. And it can be difficult because it requires you to be vulnerable. And if you already are feeling kind of shaky and unsafe, you know, right. being even more vulnerable is really, really tough. And that's where, you know, you ask yourself, well, hold on, is this person truly, genuinely safe for me? And if the answer is yes, then, you know, I would challenge you to go forward and still to add that layer of extra vulnerability.
I feel like it's only a public service to acknowledge too. When we had our conversation the other day, I think we talked for an hour and 45 minutes.
Yes, it was. I got off and I was like, that was like a 2-hour couples therapy session.
It really was. It was really yeah. long. And I think we really do have to acknowledge that for at least the first 35 maybe minutes, hour? maybe
yeah.
hour.
Yeah.
I mean, we were both just like, just riled. Like it yeah. took a
very
long,
defensive for us. Very trying defensive. To keep it at bay.
Trying so hard, yeah. you know, to like, yeah. but I mean, I think I'm only saying that just so people who are listening can understand it's really hard. And this yes. is, these are two people who are highly trained and like right. really committed to relationships and really good right. communicating. Like, and we spat at each other.
Yeah.
That's a little strong, but like.
Yeah, it was just, we were
snippy. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
We were snippy like, and defensive. Hell? Right. yeah. I mean, like Shannon must have like said this. To me 100 times, that's not what I said. And I'm like, right. yeah, it is. Yeah. Like, yeah, like, but that's what you meant.
Though.
Yeah, but like, yeah. Yeah, but like, I'm a mind reader and I know what you meant.
Right.
You know, which is my bullshit, you know, but right. I just want to say it so we know that yeah. that is sort of part of the repair work. And I think it's so easy to become fatigued in that yeah. moment. And feel like we're just going around and around. And that is when people sort of like go to a couples therapist or sort right. of like seek counsel of like, we don't know how to break this.
Yeah.
Hopefully we've been able to offer a couple things of like, these are ways to break it. And one, like the main one is sort of looking into yourself, taking a deep breath and saying, okay, where is there a possibility that I'm misreading this situation? Where is there a possibility mm-hmm. that I can give the other person a grace? Where is there a possibility of me developing more understanding rather than trying to explain myself?
Right. You know, and then at the end of the day, like, okay, well, what growth could come from finally acknowledging or having this, you know, uncomfortable discussion, and, you know, what will be better for it? Thank you so much for listening to The Tarot Diagnosis. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok under the handle @TheTarotDiagnosis and join us while we pull daily cards and explore tarot and mental health in between podcast episodes. You can also subscribe to our podcast to make sure that you never miss an episode. If you have a topic or question that you'd like for us to explore on the podcast, you can contact us directly on our website, www.thetarotdiagnosis.com.